Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for September 6th, Labor Day weekend 2015. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Greetings from Atlanta.
And welcome Tim Shipley.
Good evening, sir.
All right, good to have you. Just to let everybody know, no guests tonight on Labor Day weekend, but that's okay. We had, you know, between Kim Davis and Survey USA Today, creating polls, the Louisiana governor's race, the Nashville mayor's race, and many other things, we kind of didn't think we'd have time for a guest. And since we don't have a guest, we're going to talk about Kim Davis. And Tim was outraged by this, like probably many others. We're going to start right off with Tim on the outrage of the week. Have at it.
Yes, sir. Well, Grayson, Kentucky is can be described as a sleepy place. It's a town of about 4,100 souls in a rural county in the northeastern region of the state of Kentucky. There are three state parks that kind of circle the town, not too far from it, and those bring in some visitors to the area. Interstate 64 skirts the northern fringe of the town on its way through the mountains to nearby West Virginia. I actually passed through there once myself, but I don't really recall anything about it. It's one of those towns just out of sight of the road that mainly exists for many travelers in the form of a roadside at an off-ramp. That was my lone experience with Grayson in Rowan County. Isn't it odd how things work in American politics, though? Rowan County, Kentucky is now front page news all over the country. That's because it's the home of Kim Davis, and she's incarcerated in the little town of Grayson there. She's the county clerk there, as her mother was before her, and her son is presently her assistant in the office. If we follow the news, and I mean it all, we pretty much know the rest of her story. Citing her religious beliefs as a Christian, she refused to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples. When told that she had to comply because the Supreme Court had ruled that same-sex marriage is constitutional, she then said she would not issue any marriage licenses at all so that she wouldn't have to obey the law. So she was sued by two gay couples and two straight couples who were all seeking licenses. And this past Thursday, a federal judge declared her to be in contempt for not following a court order to issue licenses, and she was put into the local jail, as is Kentucky law. Right on cue, here comes the Christian right rallying to the side of a new hero. They're holding vigils, they're holding rallies, they're holding signs. 200 to 300 of them showed up to protest her incarceration at the jail where she's housed. One of the folks, I saw this on television, had a really cute sign. It read, "My piece of this nation is still under God." Well, really, which piece is that? Is that out there in Sarah Palin's real America? Is it what this guy designates as under God? Did he check with God beforehand? What's the deal? Where is this little piece of the nation, of this Shangri-La that he's talking about? Where is this? And where's the rescue to be performed? Also, folks, here comes the cavalry. Now, they're not riding horses, but they are speaking out of the wrong end of one, okay? No less than 9 of the 17 Republican candidates for president have come to the defense of Davis. We have Bush, Walker, Rubio, Cruz, Christie, Jindal, Paul Santorum, and Huckabee. Of course, Governor Huckabee is Mr. Religious Freedom. I've noticed as long as everyone agrees with him on what that religion is. But anyway, here he comes. He's already informed us that this episode amounts to nothing more than the, quote, criminalization of Christianity in our country. And he set up a petition on his website to demand the release of Davis and has about 55,000 signatures. And just guess what else? Out of the goodness of his heart, because he sees injustice in our heartland, he's going to Kentucky on Tuesday to hold a rally for Davis and her supporters. And it's got a catchy name, too. You're going to love this. It's called the I'm with Kim Liberty Rally. There'll be balloons, banners, signs, smiling faces, and Master of Ceremonies, Governor Mike Huckabee. Also, as luck would have it, the media is more than welcome to be there as honored guests so that the event can make the evening newscast. And I'm sure that none of this is being done because the Huckabee campaign is languishing with their candidate in the 5 percentile range. I mean, who would even think such a thing? Well, other than myself and along with most of the rest of the country, that is. Governor Huckabee is thrashing about desperately trying to reignite what's left of his diminishing chances to win. This isn't going to help him. He's not going to get the nomination with this or any other dead-end cultural crusade. He just hasn't admitted that yet. He's still in the denial phase. I do, though, right here, wish to give some genuine credit to both Carly Fiorina and Lindsey Graham. They have articulated their opposition to the actions of Davis, citing the rule of law and thus breaking ranks with the other GOP aspirants who've spoken out on this issue. Good for them. And speaking of the law, Chase here, the Supreme Court has ruled that same-sex marriage is constitutional. Whether people agree with it or not, law in this country, at least as it is interpreted per the Constitution, is whatever those 9 justices say it is. Right or wrong, it's always been that way. That makes it law and makes it unlawful for any public official to block that law's implementation. This is not about Kim Davis's religious freedom. She still has that. We all do. This is about her job that she was elected to do. The requirements of that job are straightforward. She is refusing to do her job. If she feels that her religious beliefs will be in some way compromised by the discharge of those job duties, then she should just resign. No one put a gun to her head and forced her to run for clerk to start with. No one is forcing her to stay there. She can quit the job. If she was out in the private workplace, she could be fired for refusing to do her job. So just quit. Then she won't have any conflict with her religion, and that will set it. Now, what I'm about to say, I don't know for sure. I'm just speculating. But I don't believe she wants to quit. She wants to be a martyr. And those who oppose this law also want her to be that martyr. They want her to be a symbol. She stays the course, and she can be famous, get the book deals, do the interviews on Good Morning America, and be somebody. I believe she's enjoying the notoriety. I know that some would think I'm being harsh by saying those things, but tell me, what am I supposed to think when I see this circus and its clowns acting out? One of those gay couples who was denied a license has spoken out about this. They've been together 17 years as a monogamous couple. And Mrs. Davis, well, she's been married four times, committed adultery, and had two children out of wedlock. And she's the person that Mike Huckabee wishes to promote as a defender of God's law. You know what? I'll give her one thing. She has a lot of nerve to be setting herself up as a defender of the sanctity of marriage. I'd love to ask Governor Huckabee something, along with those other eight Republicans. Let's just say that an official works in the bureau that, issues driver's licenses. And let's say that this official also happens to be a practicing Muslim. If he refused to issue any licenses to women, stating that it would compromise his religious beliefs, what then? Would Huckabee hold a rally for him? Would any of that bunch come to his defense? His religious liberty? No, of course not. But I bet I know what they'd say. Some of them have already said it to cover themselves about this Davis deal. They have alluded to, how should I put it, to Judeo-Christian values that were brought to our shores by Western civilization and provided the bedrock for the founding of our nation. Well, never mind what really happened, that our founding was mainly influenced by a combination of English common law along with the writings of John Locke. Jefferson, as a matter of fact, borrowed heavily from his theories when he was drafting the Declaration of Independence. These know-it-alls need to go and read the Second Treatise of Government. That's what they need to do. You know what we don't do in this country? We don't just obey the laws that we want to obey. This is not multiple choice here. If you don't like this law or any law, then the way you handle that is you go and vote and elect people who will give you the laws you like and appoint the judges who agree with you. That's the way it works. We have laws and not a state religion. Your religious beliefs do not trump the laws of this country, period. And government officials must also follow the laws that they are elected to uphold, period. There is no debate on this. You know what? I'd like to leave this particular outrage today with these words. In this country, the rule of law guarantees equal treatment to every individual, unquote. You know where that's written? Well, you can find that in the Republican platform of 2012. And this week, nine Republican presidential candidates were so outrageous that they didn't even heed their own words, David.
Yes, so many things to say there. I didn't know about the four marriages. I'm going to kind of add a serious comment. My first thought when I heard about this, I kind of thought back to Forrest Gump and the scene where, you know, Forrest has been put in there to listen to George Wallace standing at the schoolhouse door. And George Wallace said he didn't agree with the Supreme Court's decision. He didn't like it, blah, blah, blah. But then he stepped out of the way and those you know, African-American students enrolled and integrated the University of Alabama. George Wallace had the good sense to accept the law and step out of the way. When you are further to the right or are more stubborn, or what do I say, than George Wallace, that's a really, really strange, awkward place to be. Catherine, as I throw it to you with your comments on this, did you realize she was a Democrat until you looked it up or what have you? I didn't know that until I actually looked on the Wikipedia page for her.
I learned that, I don't know, it was later in the game, like sometime early this week. I don't know where I read it, but I was, you know, I'm always disappointed when Democrats disappoint me, you know. But Tim is absolutely right. This is so ridiculous and so contrary to everything that we learn in school and learn and practice in our lives, that, you know, this is her job. She doesn't want to do it. She can quit. She can resign. But it's her job. And, you know, Tim used the example of driver's license of someone, you know, refusing to issue a driver's license to a woman because they're Muslim. One of the other examples I've seen is if someone refused to issue a gun license because killing is against their religion. We would, the Republicans would be outraged on the other side of that, right? So I think it's a lot of strident, you know, flurry of, you know, outrage. But in the final analysis, there's no question that she's just wrong. And you can disagree with what the Supreme Court said all day, and you, like Tim said, you know, work to work within the system to try to change that, but to just refuse to do your job is just ridiculous. It's completely contrary to the American, you know, sort of doctrines, to, in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a lot of jobs where people in government where people do certain things that they don't 100% agree with. It wouldn't be their policy or what have you, but they realize that they're an official of the court, of the government, whatever agency, and they have to do what they're supposed to do. And so, you know, I think a lot of times police officers get in those situations. They have to, there's some situation going on, and they have to, you know, enforce the law, keep the peace or whatever, and they might not always want to do it that certain way, but they have to. Because they have to uphold the law. Same thing here. She should just uphold the law. And if she hates it that bad, then, like Tim said, just don't do the job. Because there's a lot of jobs in government that people may have disagreements with. And if they're that strong, get out of the way and let the next person do it that wants to.
Well, you know, we're a political show here, and we look at the political angle of things. And I got to throw this question out there to y'all. Don't you think Huckabee's playing this angle to try to reignite his campaign?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, anything to get that Duggar guy off the screen, because every time that guy comes out, it gets tagged to Huckabee. I mean, the only guy that's had a worse summer than Duggar with that kind of headline is that fella from Subway. I mean, it's just been terrible. There was another headline that came out on him, and I didn't plan to talk about it, but since Huckabee's coming to discussion, you got to bring it up.
So then this is another one of those red meat things that these candidates are throwing out there for the base to try to fire them up before the primaries and caucuses, right?
What? Yeah. And get into that niche. I mean, he's hurting. I guess he's battling with Santorum, maybe Cruz. He's probably not even battling so much with Trump here to get votes.
Carson.
One thing I am curious, this is what I would like to find out. I would like to find out prior to this, what was Kim Davis's political activity? Was it just, hey, I want to hand out, you know, marriage certificates and birth certificates and, you know, court summons and all that stuff that the clerk of court does, and, you know, it's just a job and I have to have a party and this county's more Democratic? Or was she involved in politics and, like, what are her leanings? I mean, is she like a big economic liberal maybe? I would be curious to find that out, where she stands on other issues. Has she supported other candidates in races? Like, did she, you know, endorse anybody, say, in 2008? She might have been elected then, but I'm just curious about that kind of thing.
You know what I think
if
it is?
If you would see that.
I think the story is told there in the family history. Her mother had the job before. Her son is her assistant in the office. That's almost like a family business.
Yeah,
right?
That's what I think,
and
too.
Her
mother was a Democrat.
Her
mother was a Democrat. She probably just is a Democrat because her mother and father were Democrats, and they were Democrats because their parents were Democrats. You know, it's...
And as we found out, there's a lot of difference in running as one and actually being one, isn't there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I would be curious to find that. If anybody sees that, send that to me. I would be, if there is anything there. There may not be anything there because it's just a job for, more or less.
Well,
it'd be like, you know,
have
a plumber. They plumb. They don't have a political leaning about it.
I have an anecdote about that part of Kentucky. I went to one of those state parks, and that I used to go to the Kentucky state parks all the time. My parents would drive down from Michigan, and we would drive up from Georgia and meet them there and spend a weekend or whatever. And Kentucky has really beautiful state parks. And so one year we were staying there, and we were driving through, and I don't know if it was actually that town, but it was right in that area. And we, my former partner and I loved businesses that were like combination businesses, you know, like tattoo parlor, gas station, you know, whatever. And you see a lot of those in the South. But my very favorite one was in that part of Kentucky, and it was Bible and Tire. So it was a tire that also sold Bibles. And that was right in that.
Wow, Catherine. Yeah,
so I
that
think
is
that's
funny.
Sort of an indicator of what that, you know, part of Kentucky is all about.
But I will say this, Catherine, a bookstore combined with a mechanic shop would be a pretty good deal. You get your car worked on and you pick up a book to read, yeah, be it a Bible. So they need to expand. They need to sell Bibles and other books and do
but
more
it had a great
than just
sign,
Bible.
Right? It had a great
it,
sign.
It
with
would
the,
be
with
everything
a,
you need. Get your car worked
with
out
with a tire and a cross and a Bible. So just a little.
But Catherine, before we move on, I got you beat, though, and I thought I told y'all this when I went out to Texas, not last summer, but the summer before. Whenever it was, I went through Mississippi going out to Texas. It may have been 2 summers ago now. I came across a hairdresser laundromat. Now,
oh, that makes sense.
That was a good one. Yeah, you do your clothes, you do your hair, and it looked just as you could imagine outside of Jackson, Mississippi. But let's
Dave,
go ahead.
You got that
and
all
get
wrong, though.
Some...
It's not you be getting your laundry and hair did at the same time.
Yeah.
That's how we say it in the South. We get our hair did.
Hair did. Yeah, it was something else. And just had never seen that one. Well, let me move on to a poll, and we're going to talk about interesting. Survey USA did a poll, came out Friday, and it got a lot of attention. You know, Labor Day, the state of the race at Labor Day, and Labor Day in politics is always such a tied together thing. And so it got a lot of attention, and it said, you know, Donald Trump leads all Democrats. He leads Hillary Clinton 45-4, and I'm like, whoa, that's crazy. Let me look at that thing. And one thing I will say, I love Survey USA, the way they post the crosstabs. And that's when I got into this thing and was like, oh, now I see what's going on. According to Survey USA, Donald Trump in a race against Hillary Clinton would get 31% of the Hispanic vote. He'd get 25% of the African-American vote. He'd only be losing the African-American vote. It looks like about 24%. But the Hispanic number just right off the bat was like, whoa. He would only be losing one age group. He would be losing the youngest voters, 18 to 34, by 19%. Voters 35 to 49 who have become more Democratic recently, he'd be winning those voters by 12%. It seemed like there were more crosstabs that did not match what we've come to know in politics as ones we do. Tim, did you look at this poll? And once you kind of drilled down in the numbers, what did you think?
Yeah, and I found some troubling things. First of all, this poll was of adults. 10% of the respondents were not registered to vote. Cell users where Clinton would lead him by 16 points were grossly underrepresented in this poll. You know what, one thing that really set off alarm bells in my head, they only have Clinton up by 5 points over him among female voters? Oh, come on.
Come on.
No. No. I'm not going to pay a lot of attention to this, David. I'll be honest with you. No. It don't add up to me. There's no way that Donald Trump is within 5 points of her in female voters. That's not possible.
So, Catherine, would you say that number was worse, or that Latino voters, 31% of them would vote for Donald Trump? Which number was worse?
Well, I think the worst. I think the women. That's ridiculous. I think both of them are ridiculous. But also, you just have to wonder about the reason they did the poll. Like, why would you even do a poll and with, you know, 10% of your polling group not being registered voters?
Yeah, I don't know who paid for this poll. I mean, was it just one they wanted to do?
Because
obviously, it doesn't behoove them to do bad polling. It makes them look bad. Which, if you start to look at this thing, you're like, do they know what they're doing, Tim?
No, that's what you run into when you do polls of adults. You can do polls of adults. You can do polls of registered voters. You can do polls of likely voters. You can underrepresent one group. You can overrepresent one group. You can base your polling data on the results of the 2004 election like Romney's people did. Those numbers can get skewed very easily, and you've got to be very careful. And I just think polls of adults have to be taken for what they are. Wouldn't you think that of those 100 people who were not registered voters, that a great majority of them, because of name recognition and various other things, would say, yeah, Donald Trump, he's telling them like it. You know, that would skew things. He's dominating the airwaves right now. With Clinton, the only thing you hear is something negative about her email thing. And then they move on to the Donald Trump story of the day. The guy's like a rock and roll star or something. And I wouldn't pay a great deal of attention to this, although I think Hillary's numbers have suffered some with all the negative stuff. I could not possibly see that. You know, what do you think, David? What do you think of these numbers?
I just don't imagine any world in which 3 out of 10 Hispanic voters are supporting Donald Trump. I mean, I've heard that, you know, after the way he's conducted himself and having the feud with Jorge Ramos, which is apparently a big icon in the American Latino community, that if he gets 10% of the Republican vote at this point, it may be bad. I mean, if he were to be the nominee, the Republican nominee might do, if it's a Jeb Bush, would do much better than 10%, I think. But he, I've heard, is just, I mean, a lot of Republican-leaning Hispanic folks just see him as such an enemy to their people that they may leave the party in which they voted for time after time just for that race. He is doing irreparable damage to the Republican brand and the Latino community, and that poll's not showing it. And I'm just wondering, who did they find? Did they just find people that just lied about being Hispanic? I mean, I don't get where they would find these people to even give you the numbers. So,
Republicans have not run this close in female voters in multiple presidential elections. Where did they get that?
See, I think that number's wrong, but I can tell you how you get that number. You underrepresent, cell phones. You get landline voters, and then you find, you know, ladies, their husbands probably don't allow them to have a cell phone or what have you. And you just get some ladies that are so conservative. And you can find those ladies. Where do you find the Hispanic voters that still are supporting?
Yeah, but Catherine, isn't it true that the real huge number for Democrats among female voters is among single female voters who overwhelmingly vote Democratic, right?
I haven't looked at the numbers lately. That's actually, it's true, But it's also true that single women under 35 or under 40 or, you know, one of those, I'm not sure if it's 35 or 40, but what they call, you know, young American single women are also very bad at turnout. They don't vote. They don't see the argument is they don't see either party representing them very well. Because there's so few women in elected office, the percentages are so low that a lot of young women just don't see any anyone representing them, so they don't vote. It's a problem. It's there's a lot of people putting a lot of thought and energy and money and effort into getting those women out to vote, and have been for the last couple cycles.
And, David, we've talked about this before, but why do these polls consistently underrepresent cell phone users?
It's just having to move forward, you know, with the times, if you will.
But everybody's got one.
I know. They just it takes a little more work. But, you know, you're less likely, I think, to, and I don't have a home phone. It's been 5 years, it seems like, since I've had one. You just don't answer your cell phone with the weird – because, see, now I don't know about a lot of people, but I'm getting a lot of, you know, random telemarketer calls. And so I've gotten to where I kind of screen my calls more than I ever would have when I don't recognize the area. Like, I don't know anybody's calling me out of, you know, somewhere – Reading, Pennsylvania has been calling time lately. And if this pollster's out of some funky city, they may have been like, man, you got to call 50 cell phones before you can get five people, whereas I can call – you know, 10 landlines to get five people. Maybe it's kind of laziness because they want to throw numbers out here. I'll tell you another shocking one in this poll. Donald Trump leads Hillary Clinton 47-41 in the South. He leads Hillary Clinton 49-31 in the Midwest. In what world is the Midwest more Republican than the South?
Not just more Republican, but supporting Donald Trump. I mean, you might believe it if it was John Kasich or Scott Walker, but
yeah.
Donald Trump, I just don't see Donald Trump in Indiana and Kansas and Nebraska.
Yeah,
right.
But I saw that number. I thought, well, that's kind of a weird number. Where did that come from? I mean, sometimes they need to have like little checks and go, okay, if this comes out this weird. And then they have to go, wait, we may have called 1,000 people, but I'm not sure what Twilight Zone we called for our 1,000 people because it's not matching anything we know. You know, unless, you know, maybe they called the Latino Midwestern vote, Republican voters, no matter what, ink, and got some of these people. And maybe a lot of them were ladies at that, and so that skewed like four columns off. This thing's crazy. Well,
I just want to say something about cell phones. I think that it's also harder to get cell phone numbers. They're not.
That's true.
It's not as easy. And also, I think you need. I know that in party politics and campaigns. You can't call people on their cell phone without their permission.
Oh, the call list. Yeah, the.
Well, but with any cell phones.
Well, I think some of they're getting around that. A lot of these companies.
But it's also just
I get calls almost on a daily basis. My wife and I both about student loans. We're not going back to college to get our doctorate. I hadn't had student loans owed in 15 years minimum. My wife never has any. And we still get these calls. There's other things, like about your medical insurance and just, you know, total telemarketers. So people, of course, these may be such shifty companies. They can follow the law because they open up and they close down the next day and, they're hit and run. But, you know, it's just, I think the cell phones are going to make polling difficult in the transition, and it'll be up to the industry to figure out how to catch up. So polls may not be as valuable is a scientific tool, it may be wonderful discussion fodder for us, but it's going to, you know, surround Election Day with more mystery, which is not necessarily a bad thing, because it doesn't matter if you use a cell phone, a landline, or two solo cups tied together by a wire. you know, the Election Day poll, the true results will still matter the same way. We'll talk about the polls, and one thing that has been consistent, and this one I do believe more because it's poll after poll after poll, there is definitely a second-place candidate in the Republican nomination process, and it's Ben Carson. And he's done it with, like, next to no publicity, like certainly Donald Trump's gotten, Jeb Bush has gotten more, I think Ted Cruz has gotten more, even Mike Huckabee with his shenanigans this week has gotten more. Tim, how do you think Ben Carson is doing this? How is he staying at number two so consistently and widening the gap between two and three?
Yeah, this is the Monmouth poll is the one that's really vaulted him to number two. He's siphoning off some faith voters, probably at the expense of Trump, who is a more, should I use the word, secular type than Dr. Carson is. One thing I think that's helping him is that other candidates are hitting Trump hard, recognizing that Trump right now is the top dog in the polls, while Carson can kind of lay back and be the nice guy. Another thing Carson is doing is we're just going to have to watch him in Iowa. That's where he is all in. He's been out there like 10 times. He's investing most of his money, his time, his staff in that state. He wants to be next year's Rick Santorum. And he just needs this perfect storm that he can thread through. He's raised about $6 million, mostly from small donors. I believe only Bernie Sanders has raised more money among small donors. So that's where Carson's getting about all of his money. And $6 million in today's, you know, political presidential atmosphere is not a lot of money. So he's going to have to carefully thread the needle and hope that Iowa ignites his campaign. And he needs a good showing in Iowa. And he needs those evangelical voters that heavily dominate the caucuses in that state. And he needs for the other candidates like Bush and those guys to keep attacking Donald Trump, because I believe that's who he's surging at the expense of.
Well, a few things, Tim. First off, I would say that he ought to aim higher than Rick Santorum. I just have the feeling he's going to, you know, just going to do a lot better than Santorum,
well,
even in Iowa alone.
Santorum in Iowa,
million?
David.
I don't know if this is a term that's used a lot, but I think a lot of times in campaigns, there's campaigns that I would call solar-powered. And whereas a traditional campaign would need, you know, $6 million to be nothing, and I'm not saying that $6 million certainly won't get it done. It'll get the Iowa caucuses done, and that's about it. But they make more out of less. And Rick Santorum's a good case. I think Rick Santorum last time might have been solar-powered, if you will. He had extremely little money and got more bang for his buck. And so that's one thing. Catherine, I want to tell you, my favorite line about that Politico story that kind of prompted our discussion was when Donald Trump said, you know, Ben Carson's really not a job creator. And, of course, you know, I'm sure, you know, I just don't even know how Ben Carson, what he does on Mother's Day. He probably has to send his mother an apology letter since he's just wasted his life so much. Wasting his time on this brain surgery thing when he could have been a job creator. It's not even relevant, Catherine, the fact that he's not a job creator.
No, it's not relevant. But that's, you know, that's, I mean, Donald Trump isn't really a job creator either. Well, he creates jobs in other countries for his clothing lines and his, you know, anyway. I think the thing about Ben Carson is that I think he's working the ropes in Iowa. I mean, I think he's pounding the pavement. I think he's talking to people. I mean, you're always hearing about him going to these small community events, and I think that's really important in Iowa, and it sounds like he's got an Iowa plan. You know, he knows someone who's advising him is advising him well about what it takes to win Iowa, or to, you know, I'm not sure he'll win Iowa, but place well in Iowa, what that Iowa strategy is. It'll be interesting to see if all that pays off for him, if the people who say they support him actually vote for him in the caucus. That's always a challenge. I mean, I think you could talk to Howard Dean, you could talk to Hillary Clinton, you could talk to a lot of people about what they thought was going to happen in Iowa that didn't happen in Iowa. So I think that's interesting. But I think you're absolutely right that all the light is shining on Donald Trump, and someone is going to usurp that second place because of all that light that's shining on Donald Trump. And it's looking right now like that might be Ben Carson, but it could be someone else before the game is up. And I just want to say one more thing. I mean, we still have plenty of time, but, you know, I always think of Labor Day as sort of the Labor Day of the year. So, like, next Labor Day to be the sort of final kickoff for presidential campaigns. It's like the final push is always Labor Day weekend for me. That's how I always look at it. So I think, you know, right now we're a year away from that. And, you know, we've been saying, or I've been saying, you know, it's a long way off. It's not so long a way off anymore. Like, we're really, you know, down to the we're running down to, this is it. You know, as we move forward now, we're going to see a lot happening, and it's going to be very interesting to see how all that has happened before, that has been so much inside baseball, so much of people like us talking about the election and everybody else being like, oh, yeah, you know what, Donald Trump's running for president, you know, how weird is that, you know, the whole thing. So I think now, as we move forward into the next year, I think it's going to become a lot more, there's going to be a lot more heat, if that's even possible.
Well, I think you're right about it, and Labor Day is just such a political holiday for folks that love politics, like us, not really so much the marking of the end of summer. All, of course, it'll be how many 90-degree days before the end of the month. That's why I never think about it being the end of summer. Well, talking about, you know, Ben Carson, one thing I do think helps him a lot is it's been over a decade now. Went to a political seminar, and they said, you know, if you want to run on the issues, people have to agree with you on that issue. They think you have to be able to get something done with that issue. And then finally, they have to think that issue is important enough for to cast their vote upon. But if you run on likability, they just have to like you. And I think that's where Ben Carson, a lot of his strength comes from, because so many of these 17 candidates agree with each other on every single issue, so it's hard for them to contrast themselves with each other. You know, like Tim said, you know, Lindsey Graham and Carly Fiorina did contrast themselves on, you know, the same-sex marriage licensing issuing. But very few times they don't, and therefore it becomes about biography. And Ben Carson's the only guy in the field that had Cuba Gooding Jr. play him in a movie, so he's got a better story, maybe the best story of all these 17 people running. And so I think that likability factor comes in play. What do you think, Catherine or Tim?
Oh, I agree. I think he's very likable. You know, he's a success story. He's like every mother's dream, right? He's a doctor. He's not only a doctor, but he's a pediatric neurosurgeon. I mean, he's like straight out of Central Casting, the perfect character. And he's, you know, attractive and poised and if you listen to what he's talking about, a lot of it doesn't make sense. But as far as how he delivers himself, he's very poised and attractive. So, yeah, I think he fits a lot of those, you know, he checks a lot of those boxes. So if you just don't listen to him, he seems to be the ideal candidate.
Yep. Tim?
You know, I just still have to wonder, how does he win the Republican nomination?
Yeah.
I cannot get around that. How does Ben Carson win the Republican nomination? It's not a race, it's a marathon. No matter what anyone says, it takes a lot of people, it takes a lot of staff, it takes a lot of planning, it takes a lot of money. And a lot of those things, he just, he doesn't have those things. So where does he get those things? If he doesn't win Iowa, I'm not talking about, you know, finishing third or fourth, but if he doesn't win Iowa, where does he go? I mean, I'm looking at a poll right now from NBC Marist of New Hampshire, and he's sitting there at 11%.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and when it turns south, I guarantee you there's not going to be that many votes for Dr. Carson down here, no matter what you
hear.
Well,
I'll say this. He has to win Iowa, and he benefits from a really large field. And when candidates start dropping out, he needs the certain candidates to drop out. He doesn't Bush dropping out, it wouldn't help him. He needs Santorum or Huckabee to drop out. That's going to help him. Another thing, talking about him not doing well in New Hampshire, I tell you somebody that may actually help Ben Carson with New Hampshire, and that's Hillary Clinton, and I'll tell you why. I think the Clinton campaign is going to try to de-emphasize the importance of New Hampshire in the process and skip straight to South Carolina and get the news to go that way. Don't know how successful she'll be, but that would help Dr. Carson. And what's so funny and ironic about that is obviously New Hampshire was so important in her husband's campaign, but it may be let's go from Iowa to South Carolina for her, and then that that would help Carson too possibly.
I don't know if he can get that much help in New Hampshire. They're more the establishment type Republicans than you would find in Iowa.
Well, he's gonna.
Right?
He didn't have. I was talking about like, hey, that one. They're so different up there, and just get it skipped over. Let's go on to South Carolina and fighting the growing state like South Carolina.
As a case in point, in the Republican primaries, you know, he's running second in New Hampshire right now behind Trump. Kasich.
Yeah.
As establishment as they come, right?
I think, you know, the only thing that's going to – I mean, if Ben Carson wins or comes in second in Iowa, then he's going to have to start I'm sure he already is. He's going to need a super PAC to come up behind him. They've all got to – that's what you have to have. You have to have a big – well-funded super PAC now. That's the only way you get, you know, through every gate.
Well, there's a problem there too, Catherine, and here it is. It's Donald Trump. I mean, even the most conservative super PACs, like Old St. Club for Growth, well, they're jumping in bed with some of the establishment people because their first priority is not to help a guy like Ben Carson, who they might agree with, but to get Donald Trump, no matter
what. Right, exactly.
What. So,
that's what I'm saying. But that's the only – I mean, I see that as the only path for him to get beyond Iowa. And, you know, it could happen. There could be, you know, some, you know, billionaires that haven't already put their money in could come and say, hey, you know, I like this guy. I don't know who they would be because, you know, he's like – he's got some kind of crazy ideas.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, but a lot of the Republican field does. That's the saving grace for any of them.
Oh yeah, but
yeah,
a lot of them.
All of
but
them.
What I'm saying is he needs new billionaires to support him, and I think all the billionaires that believe all that stuff are already spoken
for.
Know, they've already
David,
got a date for the prom.
Yeah, that's true. David, you mentioned something too. The number of candidates in this field, because of that. are we maybe overemphasizing the strength of a person like Dr. Carson? I mean, he's running at 22% in Iowa, and that's good enough for second place because there's so many candidates there.
Well, 22%, that's getting close. That's in the margin of error of a quarter. That would be his fair share in a four-person race.
But is that his ceiling? Is that his ceiling? Is that as good as he gets?
I don't know. I really don't know. I think he's exceeded expectations. You talk about people that have exceeded and underwhelmed expectations. He's exceeded. Rand Paul's underwhelmed. Jeb Bush is underwhelmed. Donald Trump's exceeded. There's only two or three.
But don't you think, I think Tim makes a good point, though.
Carson, Trump, and Farina. Kevin?
But what if we didn't have, what if we had Kasich, Rubio, I'm just pulling names.
You're pulling some of the better names they could get, by the way.
Like, what if we just had five? Like, Bush, Trump, Carson, Kasich, and Rubio, say. Would Carson still pull 22% with those five people?
He might pull 22%, but then they would all pull closer to 22%, you'd think. Although
That's
you would
right.
think he might then get Huckabee's vote. He might get Santorum's vote. And then he might be up to 32.
But that makes him a niche candidate. That makes him a niche candidate. That doesn't make him a serious contender for the Republican nomination. That's why Huckabee never was. That's why Santorum never was. They appeal to a certain niche. I think that's what's happening with Dr. Carson. It's the religious conservatives and the religious conservatives only that are gravitating to him right now. And it's not enough, nowhere near it.
Yeah, I don't know. He's definitely a factor in this race, though. That's the thing about this race. With the 17 candidates, somebody may not be able to win, but if they're first or second and third, even at this point in the race, they affect everything else. Donald Trump has done thus far, even if he falls apart tomorrow, he has had a significant impact on this race. He gets his own chapter in the Mark Halperin and who's the guy that writes with Halperin, the Game Change Double Down series. Probably another one in the works. And Trump's got his own. He may be getting close to a section at this point. Forget a chapter. And then this is at this point can add to it. Well, we don't have much time, but there's so much to talk about. But I wanted to talk about one that I caught on a podcast yesterday, Freakonomics, and I'm not just the creator of these podcasts. That's pretty much all I listen to. I'll listen to one after another about all kind of things throughout the day. I don't listen to radio or anything. And they had one about end-of-life decisions and medical care, and they postulate a lot of things. And they talked to the guy who was a doctor that helped craft the Affordable Care Act, and then they got into the death panels. And he goes, well, it's really the Republicans that came up with this idea first. He talked about Newt Gingrich. Then he said Johnny Isaacson crafted a bill that, let people make these decisions and possibly the money would be spent this way or that if they weren't spent on care. And they were essentially the death panels that Sarah Palin and the conservative blogosphere talked about. And my thinking was, if this really happened and, this gets out there, and, of course, Freakonomics has millions of listeners, and so even though they may not be hardcore conservatives, it's going to go to other places. Could a Tea Party candidate come after Johnny Isaacson and use this death panel thing, and I'm kind of putting it in quotes as I say it, as their pinnacle issue in running a campaign to the right of Johnny Isaacson in the primary? Catherine, what do you think?
I don't know. I don't know what this legislation was. There's been a lot of talk lately about the fact that doctors can't charge patients for an appointment in which they discuss what their wishes are for their final care. So that has to be, separate from it. it can't be part of a standard, like, Medicare appointment, apparently. I just heard this on NPR this week or last week. So I wonder if he's just trying to get – I don't know anything about the legislation, but that's a kind of a ridiculous situation that you can't have that conversation with your patient during a Medicare. So I don't know what the legislation is. I just don't think that I mean, I just think Johnny Isakson is pretty beloved, and I can't I mean, I'm sure that a candidate could try to run against him to on the right, but I just see him as sort of unbeatable at this point. I mean, he's got, like, God knows how much money, and he really is pretty – well, I mean, he's the only Republican I've ever voted for, and, you know, I'm about as far to the left as you can be.
Well, that's the kiss of death, Catherine.
Well, and he's well-loved by, the you know, all the Republicans, too. And he's a senior senator, so he gets you know, he's well-placed in committees and well-respected around the within the Washington, you know, circle. So I'm not saying that somebody might not try, but I think it's a long shot.
Well, Tim, did Catherine just describe John McCain, Richard Lugar, Lamar Alexander, which have all had this happen? Now, Lamar Alexander was unsuccessful because I think it was late in the game. What do you think, Tim?
I totally agree with Catherine on the fact that, honestly, I see no way in this world that Johnny Isakson could have any problems at all in the election. I see no way. Somebody trying to run to the right of him, I think it would be akin to him swatting a gnat out of the way. He voted against Obamacare. You know, he was for the Ryan budget and all of its health care stuff, these medical savings accounts and stuff like that. So I don't know what this program said, but, I mean, how is anyone going to get to the right of that?
Crazier. And that's usually, to me, what happens.
Well,
all these guys, all these Republicans vote so much alike. It's just some use more far right. They use the code language better, and I think that that's what they would do. I don't know if they'll be successful, but it seems like in a one-party, you know, what they think is a one-party state, that everybody wants to move up, and somebody will try them on. It just seems like they always want the more right-wing that they can get. They want to push it further and further on, and I just think it could happen. And if it does,
I think it could happen. I just don't. I don't see the where the groundswell of support would come from. I mean, maybe he might get, you know, some Tea Party groups in, you know, ex-urban Atlanta, and, you know, maybe in South Georgia or something. I don't know. I just don't see where the support comes from. I mean, you look at, like, if you read Peach Pundit, they love him. You know, everybody.
Well,
I mean, he's beloved by the AJC. You know, I just don't see who gives any oxygen to someone running to the right of him.
Right, he's got every angle covered right now.
Yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see. I think our time's gone for this week, and we didn't even get to the Nashville mayor's race, the Louisiana governor's race, and several more things.
We didn't get to talk about Jindal. Darn, I'm so disappointed.
Jindal, well, actually, yeah, when it hit the poll, it didn't really have too much to do with Jindal, but yeah, it's bitter. I will say this, there's a picture of him, like, holding up a Chick-fil-A suit. I mean, I'm sorry, sack. If Chick-fil-A wanted to sue him for defamation of character, I would support him because, of course, nobody wants to be involved with Vitter and his stuff. But who knows? Well, but until next week, we hope you have a happy Labor Day, and it's been the Cudsley Vine.
Thanks, guys.
Good night, guys.
we are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good.